Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
Hey, that's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air. On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Air. Glenn and Sarah for you today. John is off once again. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk Christmas carols a little bit and a great use for them, a life-saving use for them before the hour is through. We check in with Eric Schiller with a pro-life view on things. We'll have a great story about an origin of one of our favorite Christmas carols for the Story Corner today. That's coming up near the end of the hour. And first off, we talk about hard things quite often here on the radio and doing hard things. Hard to do hard things, hard to explain things that are hard to explain sometimes. Good morning, Sarah. You know, for me, I think some hard things might be the paperwork in life. I'm not big on that. I mean, I know it needs to be done, you know, even more than homework as a kid. Real life paperwork needs to be done. But, you know, we had an HR meeting about benefits yesterday, and, well, it wasn't as fun for me as doing an hour of the show here, or even 2 hours, like we'll do today, Lord willing. How about for you? Any particular things stand out in terms of doing or explaining hard things, even to the kids?
Well, I mean, when you're having a meeting at a certain time of day and we're waking up so early, it's maybe hard to stay awake during that meeting, I think, would be part of the problem. But we had some sick kids over the early part of this week, and so I was helping a lot of people with homework yesterday, and so that's part of the hard things, trying to explain the unnecessarily long way they're having them do math can be hard on my brain and hard on their brain. That's one of the things I would say that can be extremely hard to kind of explain. But, you know, another thing I would say today is the cookie cutter, National Cookie Cutter Day. And it can be pretty hard to roll out that dough just the right thinness and to get those cookies and, you know, cook the right amount of time. And you just 30 seconds more and they're burnt and they're done and they're no good. So that, to me, is a very difficult thing. Give me a cake or a pie. Those are way easier than cookies, but not my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, new props for our moms. We grew up eating homemade cookies, thinking it was normal and easy and, you know, eating them like chips. And then away we go. But there's a little more to it. It was at a conversation the last week here talking about how kind of cooking is more of an art form, but baking, that is a science. You can't kind of freelance the amount of time in the oven and, you know, the amount of the different ingredients. But, you know, having great minds really helps when it comes to explaining difficult things like, say, our faith, for example. And there's a new series out of the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota, on prime matters about our faith, and talking today, this half hour, about Christianity as a revealed religion. A great mind can always explain easily good complex things for us, and what better mind than Monsignor James Shea, the president of the University of Mary, joining us today. Monsignor Shea, always great to have you along.
Glenn, I'm happy to be with you. How are you today?
Doing well, doing well. You handling the early and heavy winter in North Dakota well so far?
Yeah, Glenn, it's been, you know, you're in Minnesota, and so you feel a little bit of what we've got going on here. We had an amazing fall. It was just beautiful. We had 70s most of the time, and one of those long, languid falls where you get the change of the leaves, and everything's so beautiful. And, of course, our campus sits high on a bluff overlooking the Missouri River Valley, and so we had students playing Ultimate Frisbee late into the fall. It was really wonderful. And then in November, we got slammed by a big storm, and so it's been a little bit unseasonably cold here since there. And so, I don't know, you know, North Dakota is kind of where mediocrity goes to die, because you have to be a hardy kind of soul to live here. One day you can have amazing weather, and the next day it can be a little stiff. And so, yeah, we had beautiful weather over the Thanksgiving Day weekend again, and then we've had a couple of cold, blustery days here. So we're hanging in up here in North Dakota. The students don't seem to mind. We've built great big fireplaces all over campus, and they kind of scurry in and out of the buildings and go to their classes and enjoy each other's friendship. And so, I don't know, maybe us older people complain more about the weather than they do.
Great saying. I learned just stumbling across a Scandinavian cooking show one day where they were doing things outside. And the saying that popped up was, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. So if you're dressed for it, you can have fun. I know there's a lot of hardy folks in the Northland that, yeah, you just, you know, add another layer and you're good to go, and not letting that stop you at all. But where mediocrity goes to die, I love that. As you guys hit it hard as far as being truly Catholic there and authentically Catholic. And talk a little bit about this new series you have going, Prime Matters, and how that came about.
Yeah, so the project Prime Matters, it's interesting. We have so much that's happening all the time on the campus of the University of Mary. We've got our Catholic Studies department, and we've got theology and philosophy. And then, of course, we're trying our best to integrate the truths of the Catholic faith into all of the professions. You know, so we've got these huge schools in the health sciences and in business and in education and the behavioral sciences, things like counseling and psychology and social work. And we realize that the faith, the Catholic faith, is so amazing, Glenn, because it touches upon every single aspect of human inquiry and knowledge and study. And so we said, what's a way, especially for our online students, because we have this enormous booming University of Mary online, where we have people from all over the country and really all over the world who are doing graduate degrees or completing their undergraduate degrees online with us. And so they're not here on our main campus. They're not able to go to daily mass here on campus and adoration or focused Bible studies. They're not able to have the sort of immediate Catholic community that people on our main campus are able to do or able to be a part of. And so we launched this project, Prime Matters, where we put a huge amount of content about sort of the intellectual ballast of the Catholic faith and the Christian imaginative vision, which undergirds all of the things that we believe in, and how it relates particularly to these areas of the professions. So healthcare, how the faith relates to healthcare, how the faith relates to business, how the faith relates to teaching, and all of these different types of things. But we said, rather than just make it for our online students alone, let's make it available to the whole world. And so we have this project, Prime Matters, and we put up videos and recordings. And then there's a series as well of sort of, we call it Foundations. It's a very clear, concise articles and other materials, again, videos or recordings of talks or podcasts types of things, that spell out the basics and the fundamentals of the faith. And so that's a little bit about the series, and we're really excited about it, and lots of people have found it deeply enriching.
Well, in spreading that knowledge is a beautiful thing. We're all called to do, to be able to explain that hope that lies within, to be able to talk about our faith. And it's an ever ongoing process that we keep learning so we can, you know, grow more deeply in our relationship with Christ and better explain it to others as well. And the particular aspect we're looking at today, explaining Christianity as a revealed religion, you know, quite a deep article to get into and look at that and kind of capsulize that for us today, if you would, and, you know, maybe let us walk away from this conversation with just a few points that we can use if that after-dinner conversation comes up during the holidays and we're not afraid to be talking politics or religion at our table. Because as, you know, Catholic talk radio people, you know, beware, that's about all we can talk about.
Yeah, so this question of Christianity as a revealed religion is really important, because, and we see it among the young people who come to the University of Mary very often. Even if they're raised in solid Catholic homes, there's so much confusion in our culture about how the Catholic faith is distinct and very different from the rest of the religious traditions in the world, that it's very easy for a young person to get confused and to say, well, you know, there are lots of different religions in the world. There are lots of different spiritual approaches to truth. And so why would I have so much allegiance to the faith that I was raised in? Why would Christianity or Catholicism be distinct or different? And the answer is a little bit in this article, Christianity as a Revealed Religion. It's this, that among the great religions of the world, when you look at the different spiritual traditions, the vast majority of them through time, the vast majority of religious traditions that have acknowledged the existence of a spiritual world or the existence of the divine, have understood religion in a non-revealed way, that it's a question of humanity groping in the darkness, trying to find enlightenment, doing the best that we can according to sort of the ethical principles that we can discern that are universal to human experience, the general sense of right and wrong and the way that we ought to really treat each other. And we're able to grope and to find that. And when it comes down to it, most religions are teaching the same thing, that we really should just be good to each other, that we shouldn't be cruel, what it means is to get along and to be together in this world. And there's a lot that can be said about that, Glenn. There's a lot. We should be good to each other. We should treat each other well. But Christianity is distinct in that it's not simply an ethical tradition. We believe that actually we're not groping in the darkness because God has intervened in human history. He's come down actually himself in the person of Jesus Christ to reveal to us the truth about God, about the world in which we live, and about every human person, about ourselves. And so God has revealed us to ourselves. He's revealed himself to us, and he's given us truths which are meant to save us, which are meant to rescue us. And that's a completely different conception of what faith is all about. Now, of course, we're not the only revealed religion, but all the three major revealed religions all come from the same source, which is the revelation to Israel. And so you've got Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all of which trace themselves back to that first revelation to Abraham, and Christianity emerges then as a revealed religion, and so it's different. So lots of people always say, Glenn, oh, all religions are just the same. You know, just find the one that works for you. That's something which would be reasonable to say if God never revealed himself to us. But if God did reveal himself to us, if God actually attempted to communicate the truth about the world, the truth about himself, the truth about mercy and goodness and salvation to the human race, gosh, then that changes everything. So does that help to clarify a little bit the importance of understanding Christianity as a revealed religion?
Absolutely. Hard to beat having a creator and the point, the truth that we have a creator who came here to reveal himself to us. And we celebrate that in his infant arrival here in a coming few weeks. And also that he came as a savior. Now, we talk about different religions, kind of boiling it down to, well, you got to be nice to one another. And do we need that as a basic to make sure, you know, that seems like Christianity, you know, in pop culture anyway, in our modern day and age, doesn't have a reputation for being kind almost in many corners. And that's almost a basic. People have to see that first before they can get to learn that there's such a thing as a savior and they actually need a savior.
Well, so there's a twofold thing here. So being good, which is what Christianity does teach us and instruct us to do, being good, finding goodness and wholesomeness in life, having virtue, is not exactly the same as being nice. Sometimes people confuse those two. And so there are hard truths in life as well. And there are ways in which life confronts us with difficult choices in which it won't always feel like what we're experiencing is something that's nice. Now, what you're saying, though, Glenn, I think is very important in that people should experience those who follow the revealed faith of Christianity, who are practicing, loving, and devout Catholics, should experience us not as dour, angry, mean-spirited people, and there are plenty of people who make those accusations, but we should be, because of the liberating message of the coming of the Christ, because God has revealed himself to us, because he has come into our world and told us the truth. That truth is not something that we whack other people over the head with. That truth is something to be lived with deep relief and shared with deep joy. And so I think that it is important, yes, for us to have a strong ethical basis. And we do share that with all the peoples of the world. In other words, it is the case that the natural ethical principles of right and wrong, which you can discern throughout human experience apply to all people, including Christians, but that God has taken us a step further by revealing to us truths which we otherwise couldn't understand or couldn't come to on our own. Once they're revealed to us, and that's the work of theology, once they're revealed to us, then we can begin to probe them with the power of human reason. St. Anselm speaks of fides querens intellectum, faith seeking understanding. And so God reveals truths to us, and then we're able then to go deeper into them. So I think that's right. I think that we do start with a common ethical foundation that all human beings live by, but Christianity takes us further than that.
Is part of the bad knock against Christianity, too, is getting people to see that faith and reason can go together.
Well, now you've taken us into the depths, Glenn. This is absolutely one of the great, you know, the studies that are done now about young people abandoning the faith point again and again to this idea that religion and science or faith and reason don't have anything to do with each other. And indeed, that's not the case. And so what we experience in the revelation of Christianity, when we open the Bible, when we read the scriptures, we see, we have truths which indeed are beyond human reason, beyond human reason's ability to decipher them or to discover them on our own steam. But they're not things which are in contradiction to reason. And so faith and reason are not enemies of each other. They're different sources of truth. And God is the one source of all truth. And so faith and reason both lead us back to him.
What a great place to learn how those go together. University of Mary, Monsignor James Shea. We always appreciate your great insights and invite you to embrace that, I guess, Facebook saying of late, with the snow. If snow doesn't bring you joy, well, you still, you know, you've got less joy then, and you still got the same amount of snow. So find joy there. Make those hearty Catholics strong young men and women, and keep talking to us here, Lord willing, again very soon. Thank you so much, Monsignor James Shea with the University of Mary. We continue looking at a great use for Christmas carols, that and more. Eric Scheidler joins us next as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
This is Morning Air, your home for faith, fun, and news in the morning.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
It's hard to talk when you're smiling too much there. Oh, yeah. What a hippopotamus for Christmas. Who's got that on their list? I don't know. It's a great Christmas song as we're getting in the mood here, rolling through Advent. And going to talk a little bit in the next half hour about Christmas carols and a great use for them. And we'll look at the history of one of our most classic Christmas carols with our Story Corner before the hour is through today as well. Sarah, love that tune. You got some favorite Christmas carols in that head of yours as well?
You know, first of all, I really hope that anybody who wants a hippopotamus for Christmas has a place to put that. I mean, even if it's a small hippopotamus, I mean, I don't know if Santa's going to have room on the sleigh for that. But you know what? Hey, just keep believing. You got to keep believing. You know what? I do have some that I do like that are silly like that. You know, the Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer was one of my favorites for a long time. I really love my grandma. I'm not sure why I like that one. But you know, there's always the I Want for Christmas the Two Front Teeth, which did happen to both of my kids actually a year apart. One Christmas, one had two front teeth they needed, and the next year, that's random. Like, why would that happen right around Christmas? But it did. So, some of those are just—they're just too fun to pass up.
Oh, you know, I love the. It's kind of become a Christmas tune as far as Christmas music on the radio with the Linus and Lucy theme from the Charlie Brown Christmas special, which was always the best part of that special, I thought, as a kid. And hear that a lot and love that a lot as far as the stuff in church, you know, Angels We Have Heard on High as a kid, all la 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 la. That was great. And I don't sing, so I won't sing any more of that. And then, but then, you know, you get to the end of Christmas Mass and Joy to the World cranks in on the big cathedral organ. And that's hard to beat as well. But we have some fabulous uses for Christmas caroling we're going to talk about here with Eric Scheidler, Executive Director of the Pro-Life Action League. Eric, great to have you along today.
Glad to be back with you.
Hey, you got a favorite Christmas carol among everything we're talking about here?
Well, there's a couple that that I really love. One is Good King Wenceslas, partly because there's a really great David Childers version of that song. David Childers is a kind of Americana folk singer from North Carolina. You know, that's a story of course, the king of Czech, Bohemia, part of what is now Czechia, formerly the Czech Republic and Czechoslovakia, who in the dead of winter is helping, you know, a peasant man to survive the night, you know, provides food and wood for a fire and all these things in the dead of winter. And, you know, that's the one we sing the day after Christmas, the Feast of Stephen. That one's always meant a lot to me, you know, as somebody who's out there on the front lines of the pro-life movement, reaching out to the most vulnerable. So that sense of responsibility for the most vulnerable is, I think, one that's very dear. But probably my favorite Christmas carol would have to be Silent Night, which I've always loved. It's got a beautiful story. It's a beautiful song. But to me, it's very special because we've been singing that carol outside of abortion facilities for 20 years here at the Pro-Life Action League as a way of kind of appealing to women who are inside an abortion facility or on their way in the doors during this season of preparation for Christmas, to remind them of the Christmas story, which is the kind of the most anti-abortion story imaginable, where the entire history of humanity is changed and filled with hope and joy because of the birth of a child, of this advent of a birth that has become for so many Americans, including so many of our political leaders, a source of agony and misery and what leads them to abortion. So it's the most pro-life Christmas carol. And on top of all that, I've been there at an abortion facility singing that carol when a child was saved from abortion, because mom heard that song, thought about Mary and baby Jesus in the manger scene and all of those images of Christmas, and could not go through with the abortion. So I'm going to say Silent Night because I've seen it save a baby from abortion.
That is fabulous. And, you know, that's part of the idea of what we're talking about today. How did this idea come about? And you mentioned it's been going for quite a while, but that idea of caroling in front of abortion centers when we're focusing on something as simple and forever, it seems, as the arrival of our Lord in the form of an infant, and you juxtapose that with what's going on behind the walls of an abortion center, and it does stop and make people think.
Well, I was having lunch with a good friend of mine, Katrina Zeno, who is a great speaker, Catholic speaker, on the theology of the body and the role of women in the church. She's a Catholic feminist who really shows the Catholic genius for understanding the role of women and, you know, all of those things. So we were chatting over lunch, and it was during this time of year, you know, and she said, I think it would be a very powerful thing to bring Christmas carols to an abortion clinic because you'd be able to not only, you know, make that connection to some women and they would decide to not go through with the abortions, but you'd be kind of planting a seed for future healing because, you know, you'd be giving them this Christmas carol to remember connected with their abortion, which sounds like a very grim thing. But if year after year, Christmas carols are reminding them about the abortion, one year they'll finally face up to what really happened there and seek to rectify it, seek God's forgiveness and healing, and then be a witness to others. So it was just kind of an offhanded comment about what an effect that would have during this season of year. You know, we hear these carols and other Christmas songs in the back of background when we're shopping. People are always running around at this time of year shopping, doing their holiday stuff. And if we could, you know, make a connection between that experience and the Christmas carols, that could have a long-term impact that would lead women back to God. So that was the inspiration. And I thought it was such a great idea. We decided to try it in Chicago. And we had such success. We saw babies being saved. We saw people being really enthusiastic about this, that we decided to start inviting others to do it. And so now it's a nationwide event. We call it Peace in the Womb Christmas Caroling. I suppose the name was somewhat inspired by Planned Parenthood because they every year come out with a, Choice on Earth instead of Peace on Earth as their Christmas cards. You can buy Choice on Earth cards from Planned Parenthood. So we started thinking about, you know, the contrast between, you know, this idea of choice that, that is really just a euphemism for killing a human being violently in the womb, and the idea of peace in the womb. And so we landed on Peace on the Womb Christmas Caroling, and now we have it at typically over 100 locations around the country during the month of December every year.
A lot of these going on over the next few weekends here, Saturday the 10th or 17th, and invite folks to look up the prolifeaction.org website to find out more about where those are. Many relevant radio cities with those opportunities to carol for life, basically. Such a fabulous, fabulous idea. Talk about the need to be kind of creative when it comes to the battle in the post Roe v. Wade decision world right now, as some states abortion is completely illegal, others it's become, if it's possible, even more legal.
That's right. That's the direction that states are going. They're pulling in opposite directions, which really makes it challenging for us as we try to figure out what the best message is in different kinds of states, different kinds of environments where, you know, it's been sort of a national issue and we have the same national solution for so many years. So one of the things we're encouraging people to do this year is if they live in a state which you might call abortion-free now that abortion's been banned, we know that women of those states are still crossing state lines for abortions. We know there are probably illegal abortions, and especially illegal chemical abortions taking place. But we're encouraging people in those states to go out to those closed abortion facilities, let the media know they're coming, and sing Christmas carols in thanksgiving for that abortion facility closing. So in pro-life states, that's a powerful reminder that abortion is still a reality that needs to end in that state, even if they're not doing the abortions there. In states where abortion is, you know, growing, states like Illinois, where Pro-Life Action League is headquartered and Relevant Radio is headquartered, we have a huge task on our hands. And this kind of public witness, showing that pro-life people are compassionate, showing that we really care, going out in the public square, becomes that much more important to push back against all the propaganda. I mean, in flat-out lies, the pro-abortion forces outspent pro-life is something like 25 to 1. Pushing pro-abortion candidates and pro-abortion referendums and votes and things. We can't match them dollar for dollar, but we can certainly raise our voices for free in praise of God and reminding people that hope and joy come into the world with the promise of a newborn baby. And so that's what we're pushing for. And, you know, there's a lot of creativity that goes along with it. Some groups will go out there with a big manger, like you'd see at the big Christmas crèche at church or in the town square. And if it's a closed abortion facility, they'll lay the little baby Jesus in there, sort of symbolically representing the dawn of hope in this community now that abortion has ended. We've had groups who've dressed up like a living nativity scene, the various characters, Mary, Joseph, the shepherds, the wise men, to create a living nativity scene outside the abortion facility when they're singing. Others are going into like city centers and simply singing Christmas carols under a banner that says, "All I want for Christmas is an end to abortion." So it's not an abortion facility, but the carols are clearly for this cause because of the banners. We've been providing those banners to our different teams across the country. We still have a few "All I want for Christmas is an end to abortion" banners. If you want to pick one of those up for your group at prolifeaction.org, and people are still signing on. This is the type of activity that's what you might call scalable, right? You can do it in a very simple level, you know, just four or five friends, print out the caroling booklet we provide to you. You don't have to pick a carol. So now we've got a beautiful book. You print it out, go out to the abortion facility on a day when they're doing abortions and be out there singing those Christmas carols. It can be very simple. Or you can have, you know, musical instruments. We used to have an old gentleman who came out with a big tuba to play along with us when we were in Chicago. So people have brought out instruments and there's lots of things you can do to make it more elaborate, you know, passing out flyers at your church weeks before so people know about it. And we give you all those tools at the Pro-Life Action League, whether you want to keep it simple or go more elaborate or kind of build up year by year. We have all those tools at prolifeaction.org. So if this is something you're inspired by, but you're not finding a location at prolifeaction.org to go carol that's already been organized, you could be the organizer and we will help you. And that's what we're here for. So check us out at prolifeaction.org, and we will put you to work singing these carols in your community.
And one of the great thoughts behind that, too, is that so many people, Christmas Carol will resonate with them and get them to stop and think just long enough. And sometimes it's just that one moment, that literal moment to stop and think is what we're trying to get people to do when they're heading into that abortion center, and that can save lives for generations to come.
We have very emotional reactions to music, sounds and music, particular carols especially, that go so deep into childhood. And so the carols that we picked for our booklet were very carefully chosen to evoke those kinds of feelings of sympathy that we want women to experience outside of abortion facilities. So they're all very focused on the Christ child. You know, what child is this? Is a beautiful one that we sing. Away in a manger. O come, little children. Hark the herald angels sing. So we're reaching out to the carols that are super, super well known, and that really focus on that mother-child relationship, the hope that comes with baby Jesus. And by evoking those feelings that people already have connected to those carols, we can save a baby from abortion. It's that simple. And that's why we go do it.
We'll continue our conversation with Eric Scheidler from the Pro-Life Action League. More about saving lives with Christmas carols as we continue. Plus, a look at origins of Silent Night, all before the hour is through, as we continue with more of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Merry Beggars have something amazing in store for you and your family this coming Sunday night as we wrap up the first week of Advent. Join Relevant Radio for Christmas Live. It's a one-hour variety show celebrating Advent and the joy of the Christmas season. You'll probably smile, laugh, and enjoy some great musical performances. You might even find yourself singing along. We pause the mystery series On the Night Train during the month of December, but be sure to tune in Sunday nights at 6 for something special to prepare your hearts for Christmas. This weekend, Christmas Live on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. As we continue to talk about Christmas music and more, is a great way to save lives in front of abortion centers. Eric Scheidler joins us. His Morning Air rolls on right here, and we'll hit again some of those times and ideas about singing in front of abortion facilities here, which is such a beautiful idea, putting Christmas carols to good use, Eric. But wanted to talk a little more, too, about the environment of abortion being illegal in, you know, several states now around the country, but legal and more so in others, and with more and more abortions done chemically, that is, with the pill, the abortion pills, which are nothing like popping an aspirin and making those problems go away at all, that is something that can, you know, easily, sadly, get into states where abortion is illegal. And one of the biggest counters to that effort is really information and kind of one-on-one conversations. Talk about how important it is to equip maybe our young people especially to be able to talk about life in a one-on-one setting, Eric.
Well, it's kind of ironic right now because we've got one movement in the kind of pro-abortion world called Shout Your Abortion. They want women to go out and be proud of their abortions and talk to everybody they can about them and make a big deal about it instead of being ashamed of it. And the irony is that if women were to do that, it would reduce abortion because the experience of especially medication abortion, now well above 50% of all abortions are done with medicines, with pills that are designed to heal the body that have legitimate purposes, ones used in dealing with the effects of chemotherapy, for example. Another has been helpful for ulcers. Well, they take these formulations and they find that they can kill an unborn baby. So they're using them for that. What's particularly horrific about these abortions is that they don't take place in a sort of sanitized clinical setting like a Planned Parenthood center that's got disinfectant, even though we know a lot of abortion clinics are nasty, filthy places. But still, the abortion is taking place now at home or at school or at work or at the mall whenever you happen to pass that dead embryo out of your body. And women are having to face horrible hemorrhaging. And at the same time, they have to see the results of the abortion they have to decide what to do with this tiny little embryo, or even an early fetus that is expelled dead from their bodies, is now floating in the toilet or in the tissue or in the sanitary napkin. What do they do with this body? They recognize this is a problem. What do you do with a human body? It needs to be disposed of. It's causing tremendous trauma. And they're hearing about it at the pregnancy centers because women are seeking some kind of counseling and help. They're desperate after going through this experience for some kind of, they were never warned about it. If you go to social media, you can find videos of women complaining about the medication abortions that they've had, but too few women will talk about it because it is such a private and really shameful thing. There's a reason people don't talk about it. It's horrible to be involved in an abortion. But if they were to do that, more and more women would learn about how horrible these medication abortions are. They seem like they'll be simple, like you said, you know, just popping a pill, and you know, they're even trying to build these to young women as a period restoration medicine. So they don't even talk about it as an abortion. You take this pill before you even know if you're pregnant, and then you won't even know if you had an abortion or your period just came back. And so it's becoming a growth area for the abortion industry because of this code of silence around it. And so as pro-life people, we need to break the silence. And the Pro-Life Action League is there to help you do that. We have a resource called Sharing the Pro-Life Message that empowers you to talk about abortion with anybody on any subject, on any part of it. Any question that might come up is addressed in that handbook in a succinct way, and it allows you to be a real well-informed and well-prepared advocate for unborn babies. And you can find that handbook in our activism store at prolifeaction.org. So we're very aware of that need for the one-on-one conversation. In fact, just the other day I was talking to a woman who helped on one of our court cases at one time. She's talking about being in law school and how one of her friends became pregnant. And, you know, because she had the courage to say something to this woman and she knew just what to say because she knew this person. It wasn't, you know, random stranger. We can reach out and talk to strangers too, but that's a whole – it's a whole different, you know, approach. This was a good friend, and she knew just what to say so that this woman would see that if she were to take the life of her unborn child just because it would be more convenient for her law school career, that she would be making a victim of somebody. As a lawyer, a law student, that meant something to her, and she couldn't go through with the abortion. It was a one-on-one relationship that saved a baby's life and a person who was prepared to have something to say, because they were well-informed. That is the difference between life and death in so many cases, and we can be God's channel for bringing somebody to the choice to say no to abortion and save a baby.
Eric, we talk a lot about life issues, as we ought here on the radio, and encourage people to save those lives, not end them. But so many have making that decision that they do now regret, and as opposed to dealing with that regret by going out there and looking for others and trying to encourage them to say, well, it wasn't wrong after all. I want to shout my abortion, and maybe I believe that, maybe I don't really believe that. But let's talk for a minute, too, about the access to hope and healing for so many that have gone through this and don't feel free to talk about it, feel uncomfortable hearing us talk about it, and actually are populating many of the pews that we sit in each and every Sunday.
You know, the reality is that so much of this pushback against the overturning of Roe v. Wade, of the, you know, the raising of funds to drive women, fly women across the country for abortions, you know, advocating for the most extreme possible abortion policies where abortion is allowed for any reason, all through pregnancy. That a lot of that extremism is coming out of the guilt, the shame, the regret that so many women and men, but mostly women because they're the ones who have to actually experience it, are suffering because of their own involvement with abortion. So that's part of what's happening here, is that those who have been wounded by abortion and those wounds are unhealed, unaddressed, the reasons aren't really addressed. In many cases, those are the women who are out there championing the most extreme policies as a way of kind of dealing with their own involvement with abortion. It's a kind of a, you know, psychological transfer that's taking place. We have to be aware of that. We have to be sensitive to that because there's a lot of hurt and pain there that ultimately we would like to see God's love pour over and heal. And it's easy to get frustrated and angry with those who are advocating for the most despicable and violent policies. But we have to understand, without in any way compromising on our principle of standing for life, that those people are wounded and hurt in so many cases, and we have to be conscious of trying to provide them with the face of Christ so that they can find God's mercy and forgiveness in the end.
And even we've had occasion to talk with intake counselors at pregnancy help centers who are talking with people that might be abortion-minded, and the need to just to talk lovingly with them in case they make that decision for abortion but find themselves back there again in the future, and they may choose life at that point. And so to be filled with grace for those that maybe don't appear to be filled with grace or making the right decisions about life is something that we all need to do, knowing how great life is and the need to love and promote life in the midst of all of that. Sometimes it can be very difficult when they're hollering at you out on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. We always need to leave the door open. That's one of the commands on us. And the Christmas story shows us that. Mary and Joseph had so many doors slammed in their faces. They finally found an open door. They were allowed to go to the stable, and baby Jesus was born, but that door was open. The shepherds were invited to come and behold the Christ child. And everywhere Jesus went, he opened doors. He opened the doors of tombs even. He's a door opener. We need to be opening doors, and we need to leave those doors open of conversation with people. We never slam the door on anybody. We never walk away. We never say, I'm done with you. We always are available because God is. We are always available to people. We forgive because God forgives, and he forgave us. We love because God loves us, and that's our command. We're never allowed to walk away and give up hope for anybody. And so we carry on, hopeful that every single person we encounter can be brought closer to God. If we will only be patient and loving.
Amen to that, Eric. And finally, 30 seconds or so left here, just where folks can join in the singing, even in the Chicagoland area, as well as across the country.
We have caroling going on throughout Chicago on December 14th in Chicago and December 17th in DuPage County. There are other Chicago tours, but many all across the country. There's over 70 now, I believe, and we're getting new leaders signing on every single day. Somebody listening right now might become one of those leaders today. If they contact us, we would love that. It would be such a great boon. But if you go to prolifeaction.org, scroll down to our events section, you can find all the Christmas caroling events, maybe even sign on to do your own in your town and be a part of this Peace in the Womb Christmas caroling.
All right. Blessings to you and your good work with the Pro-Life Action League. That's Eric Scheidler. And you mentioned, Eric, Silent Night. So the background of Silent Night, our story today here on our Story Corner, the story of Silent Night by Dick Smolinski. Father Joseph Moore sat at the old organ, his fingers stretched over the keys, forming the notes of a chord. He took a deep breath and pressed down. Nothing. He lifted his fingers and tried again. Silence echoed through the church. Father Joseph shook his head. It was no use. The pipes were rusted, the bellows mildewed. The organ had been wheezing and growing quieter for months, and Father Joseph had been hoping it would hold together till the organ builder arrived to repair it in the spring. But now, December 23rd, 1818, the organ had finally given out. St. Nicholas Church would have no music for Christmas. Father Joseph sighed. Maybe a brisk walk would help make him feel better. He pulled on his overcoat and stepped out into the night. His white breath puffed out before him. Moonlight sparkled off the snow-crusted trees and houses in the village of Oberndorf. Father Joseph crunched through the snowy streets to the edge of the little Austrian town and climbed the path leading up the mountain. From high above Oberndorf, Father Joseph watched the Salzach River ripple past St. Nicholas Church. In the spring, when melting snow flowed down the mountain and the river swelled in its banks, water lapped at the foundation of the church. It was moisture from the flooding river that had caused the organ to mildew and rust. Father Joseph looked out over the Austrian Alps. Stars shone above in the still and silent nights. Silent Night, Father Joseph stopped. Of course, Silent Night. He'd written a poem a few years before when he had first become a priest, and he'd given it that very title, Silent Night. Father Joseph scrambled down the mountain, and suddenly he knew how to bring music to the church. The next morning, Father Joseph set out on another walk. This time he carried his poem, and this time he knew exactly where he was going, to see his friend, Franz Gruber, the organist for St. Nicholas, who lived in the next village. Franz Gruber was surprised to see the priest so far from home on Christmas Eve, and even more surprised when Father Joseph handed him the poem. That night, Father Joseph and Franz Gruber stood at the altar of St. Nicholas Church. Father Joseph held his guitar. He could see members of the congregation giving each other puzzled looks. They'd never heard a guitar played in church before, and certainly not during midnight mass on Christmas Eve, the holiest night of the year. Father Joseph picked out a few notes on the guitar, and he and Franz Gruber began to sing. Their two voices rang out, joined by the church choir on the chorus. Franz Gruber's melody matched the simplicity and honesty of Father Joseph's words. When the last notes faded into the night, the congregation remained still for a moment, then began to clap their hands. Applause filled the church. The villagers of Oberndorf loved the song. Father Joseph's plan to bring music to St. Nicholas Church had worked. A few months later, the organ builder arrived in Oberndorf and found the words and music to Silent Night simply lying on the organ. The song enchanted him, and when he left, he took a copy of it with him. The organ builder gave the song to two families of traveling singers who lived near his home. The traveling singers performed Silent Night in concerts all over Europe, and soon the song spread throughout the world. Today, cathedral choirs and carolers from New York to New Zealand sing the simple song that was first played in a mountain church in Austria on Christmas Eve over 200 years ago. Psalm 100, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands." That's our story today. If you'd like to hear it again or share it, it's our Story Corner available each day in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app and at relevantradio.com, as well as on Facebook at the Glenn's Story Corner Facebook page. You'll find the text and audio version a little bit later on in the morning, too. And note that we always love to hear your requests for Story Corners. If you've run across something you think would make a great story, maybe written something yourself, you could email it to us. And you can do that, morningair@relevantradio.com. That's morningair@relevantradio.com. Much more conversation about Advent and Our Lady of Guadalupe, Advent wreaths, and more. It's all coming up. Bishop Edward Scharfenberger joins us next as Morning Air continues. Stick around right here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.